Hi, and welcome to the Coco's 2D podcast. I'm your host, Muhammad Azam, and I'm here again with Stefan Eiterheim. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm fine, thank you, Azam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. And we have a special guest on our show, Nathaniel Vess, who is the creator of the iPhone Game Kit. And we will be interviewing him. But before I do that, I especially like to thank Marco Newman, who has contributed music to the Coco's 2D podcast. And we'll post a link of his website and all his work on our in the show notes. And he has also contributed music to the Desert Race game, which is an open source game. So if you have music needs, if you have sound effects needs, you know who to contact. It's Marco Newman. Okay, so let's get started. How are you doing, Nathaniel?
I'm great, Azam. How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. The weather right now, well, it's kind of early, so it's good, but it's going to go 100 Fahrenheit, so okay. Woo! Yeah. Hot and humid Houston, Texas. So let me get started with the question that how did you get started with the iPhone development or iOS development and Coco's 2D development?
Well, I've been a game programmer for over 15 years now. It's been a hobby since I was a kid, and I was a freshman in high school, and I got real excited about video games. Actually, I've been excited for years about video games. I've been playing them since I was a kid, reading lots of fantasy books. Growing up in Oregon, we had a lot of rain, so I would sit in my house, you know, with my family and read books, play video games. Final Fantasy was coming out then. That was like the old school Nintendo days, and I loved video games. So I always wanted to make them, and when I was on the playground, I would be drawing like little levels of my own games and stuff, and I always wanted to make them. So when I was 14 or 15 and freshman in high school, my friends were like, hey, we're going to start learning to make video games. I was excited about it. They were learning this language called Quick Basic. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that the one with the two gorillas sample game?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you could edit your Quick Basic files in MS-DOS Edit. You remember that?
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Very well, actually.
Yeah, man.
Great
so those
times.
Were the days. One of my friends wrote a game called TIE Fighter, and there's this, you know, he was trying to make the same game as TIE Fighter that was coming out on the computer at that time, but it was funny. And I wrote a few games in Quick Basic, and then quickly started learning the C language, read a bunch of books about C programming and game programming, and kind of got the hang of it. And, you know, back then, that was when we were, like, you had to hook into DOS interrupts just to get an accurate timer that was, you know, less than seconds. Like, if you wanted to get millisecond timing, you had to hook into a DOS interrupt and do some crazy code just to get accurate timing. It was crazy back then. Hmm. So, you know, that's when we had, like, 256 colors, 640 by 480, palette swapping, and all those crazy tricks that people did back then to get games to run fast and do you guys remember StarCraft was just 256 colors, the original StarCraft?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Like Doom, that was basically my incentive to start learning C programming because I wanted to get into the data format and display some of or extract some of the textures and sound effects and stuff. That was cool.
Yeah, that's right. They had that big old glob file, the one huge file for StarCraft. We tried to hack that thing too. But yeah, I was so I was making games when I was a kid, and I loved it. I was lucky enough to contact a publisher, and they published a couple of my video games. And I felt like a rich kid. I was like 18 years old, getting $9,000 checks for my video games every 3 months, and I thought that was a lot back then. And for me, it was. So I went traveling to Australia. I went around the world. I did some fun stuff, and then all of a sudden, the money ran out, and I was like, dang, what am I going to do now? But I had kind of burned myself out writing video games at that point, and I didn't want to write any more code. I wanted to expand myself as a different person, so I went and I got a job as a busser at a restaurant, and that sucked. So a few
What's
years
What's a
later,
busser?
A busser, yeah, that's where you, like, you clean up the, you know, there's
the
a waiter. Yeah, exactly. You kind of get the dishes off people's tables and take it back to the dish cleaner.
So basically the rags part of From Rags to Riches.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, and then just a couple years ago, I really wanted to get back into iPhone game programming because of the gold rush that was going on. You know, I was sick of being broke as a busser, making only $600 a month or something crazy small, and I wanted to make money, but I also wanted to get back into my passion and my roots of making video games and making people happy with video games, and also enjoying the process of making video games. And one of my favorite types of video games ever is RPG. You know, my favorite games back in the day were Final Fantasy and, you know, those kind of games. I love the playing a game where you were progressing as a character. Your character got better. The story progressed. You could learn more about it. You get more and more deeper involved in the game. I love those kind of games. So I wanted to make an RPG for the iPhone. And I had read a book called, what's that book I recommended to you that one time, Stefan?
The 4-Hour Work Week, was it that?
Oh, yeah, right, the 4-Hour Work Week. And he had laid out this business plan in that book about, you know, how to start your own business and how to get yourself free from a job. And I had previously, you know, I had been from rags to riches again. I had been writing some business software for a while, and that kind of got me wealthy again for a while, but it really wasn't where my heart was. You know, I didn't want to be writing this business software. I wanted to be writing video games again. So I went from rags to riches and then back to rags again, and then I wanted to get to riches again. So I read this book called The 4-Hour Work Week, and I started – what I did was I threw up an ad on Google AdWords about an iPhone game kit. So before I even ever wrote a book or wrote an RPG for the iPhone again, I was testing the waters to see if there was a market. And I really liked the way the 4-Hour Work Week, you know, the business model is actually quite sound because it worked for me. So I basically tested the waters to make sure that there was a need, there was an interest for people to learn how to make iPhone games and to have all the learning and the knowledge and the guide all in one kit. So I confirmed there was a need because people were clicking on my order page on – there was like a mock order page for the kit. And so I said, all right, it's time to write an iPhone game kit. So I went – the first thing I did is I wrote Quexlore, the video game. It was an RPG. I got into the process of making it, had so much fun. I remember days waking up – I live on a boat in San Diego. And I would wake up in the mornings and be so happy. It was wintertime, cold here in San Diego. I was freezing, but I was writing an RPG again, and it made me feel so good. My heart was warm again, and I had such a great year. That was 2010. So, yeah, I mean, that was the start of Quexlore. And I wrote Quexlore, the RPG game, and then, you know, that took a couple months, and then I went and wrote a book about how I wrote it and how people could – you translate all the information in that game into real world experience so they could themselves write video games too. So there's a whole guidebook as well as in the iPhone game kit that came from that period of time. And since then, it's just gotten better and better. We've added, you know, chapters. The iPad came out shortly after that, so things had to really change as far as the engine goes. And it's blossomed into the iPhone game kit today.
How long did you work on this from start to end? And I mean, when exactly, which month did you start, and when did you start writing the book?
I started in January of 2010 to write the book, and write the code, and maybe February started the book. By about April or the beginning of May, let's say, the book was done. And believe it or not, I thought the best way to market this thing was to market it as my own self-published book on actual paper. So I researched, like, in China, how I could get the book produced for, like, $7 a copy or something like that. And I was going to sell it all myself online, ship it myself to people. And I launched this whole business in early May of 2010, and I sold one copy. And only one copy. And I was like, no, man. I was so sad that the iPhone game kit didn't work to me. I thought, no, it's not going to work. I sold one copy in the whole month. I was almost in tears. You know, I thought I had wasted all these months writing the kit and the book and everything. And it turns out, like, all I really needed was some marketing help. I went on Elance.com and found somebody that did marketing. And today, his name is Nikolas. Nikolas and I are brothers. You know, I've been to his home city, hung out with him, and we communicate with each other on the internet and talk about, you know, how to position the iPhone game kit, how to market it a lot. One of the first things we did was to make it purely digital, of course, you know. We went from me having a ragged book. I mean, this thing, you guys, have you ever tried to print your own book?
Print your own book? No.
No, yeah. I'm quite happy that Apress does it for me.
Yeah, that's good. Trust me. Like, I tried to print my own book. The edges were all ragged. Like, I couldn't get anything to line up on the edges. And that's the one copy I sold for $99. I shipped this guy a book with all these ragged edges. If you're out there and you're listening right now, I am sorry, dude. Seriously.
So is that book, I mean, you did in China, is that the reason? Or, I mean, was it like cheap? Because, you know, or...
Oh, no, I never actually went and printed it in China. I had just researched it to make sure that it was within my costs. But it wasn't, you know, like to ship, for example, they were going to do a minimum load of 500 books or something like that for $7 a copy. Mm-hmm. I had nowhere near that much cash back then. So what I did was I bought a printer and started printing it myself. And that's when I got these whole ragged edges and like just a crappy looking book. So
yeah, that's not a good idea to print the book.
You do know there are services where you can basically upload your book and people can order it and they will print it on a case-by-case basis or when like 100 orders came together.
I should have done that back then, but it was too much. It wasn't within my, you know, profit margin. I wanted to really make a lot of profit off of each one. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, when I met my marketing dude and we started working together, and we spent a month just kind of looking at the market and setting up the AdWords account and redoing the website and positioning the iPhone game kit as a digital product instead of a physical product. And that was what made it actually work. We launched it a month later, 2 months later, something like that. It was the summer of 2010, and it started to sell. So I was so excited. I quit my job as a bathroom attendant at that point and started basically updating the kit full time and, you know, putting energy into the forum and helping people out and that kind of thing. So that was a really exciting time to see this whole the ship take off or the plane actually fly. It was crazy.
Cool. So I'm taking that that you can live off the sales. And did the sales increase over time because you were continuously updating it?
I was hoping they would. I really was. But so far, everything we've done, you know, from a marketing standpoint, from updating it, has never really got it to increase. I look back at sales number, and they were the biggest at first. So, and we've been trying to increase the whole time, but I think it's kind of a difficult time right now for digital retailers. You know, the markets worldwide are kind of topsy-turvy right now. People don't have as much cash. I think that's part of it. But also, it's something that needs to be constantly updated. You know, Apple comes out with updates all the time. CocoaCity is always being updated, and I can always make the product a little bit better. I'm always going into the chapters and saying, how can I make this chapter a little bit more simple for beginners or make the screenshots better or something? And when I make those updates, it tends to sell a little bit better. And also another thing that helps is writing, you know, blog posts. As you know, Stefan, like that, and you too, Azam, like that is something that can get you, you know, a lot of attention. And if you're doing it for the right reasons and you're helping people for the sake of helping people, it tends to come back to you in the long run. So I've noticed that with the iPhone game kit that works when I'm out there trying to help people, writing blog posts that are you know, useful to them, and in the forums helping people out, sales tend to increase. So it's something where I always wished that the iPhone game kit would make more money. But at this point, I'm considering, I really want to get back into making video games again. And so I've got a lot of ideas right now, and I'm going to start, making my own, my video game ideas again.
So you're working on a new game right now?
I have a few ideas in the works, but mainly I'm focused on multiplayer video games. I played a video game the other day called Warspear Online. It's this MMORPG. How the hell do you say that?
MMORPG?
Yeah.
That's how I know them.
MMORPG.
MMORPG. Yeah. Yeah. What was the name again?
Oh, it's called Warspear Online. It's probably not the best MMORPG, but there's other ones out there that are starting to come out on the iPhone, and I'm excited about these things where you can hop into an online world. And, for example, if I have friends, like I'm from Oregon, but I live in California right now, and it'd be cool to be able to hop into this game and say hi to my friends, especially if it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see from the screenshots here that it fits right into your alley because it's a time-based game. It's basically the Japanese art style with a orthogonal view, but very high objects. Perspective look. That's what I mean.
Yeah,
it looks cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Now. Nathaniel, I was reading your this morning. Actually, I was reading your, skimming through the guide that you have published. It's like 151 pages, and one of the things I really liked about it that it immediately solved my problem. I was having problem with I had some images which has some weird background, like the like the animation images, and which had a weird background. And I think you showed how to do that using a texture mapper that you can transparent the background of the images. So that so that was a big help, I guess, on that. I mean,
you mean when using a heuristic map?
Yeah, heuristic mask? Background. Yeah.
So
Yeah, so I didn't know that. So I was like, okay, how do I do that now?
Andreas Lode. I mean, that guy wrote an awesome product. That thing is rad. Yeah. We had that problem with our background sprites because we use in the iPhone game kit, we have a whole bunch of artwork from Reiner. He's from Germany as well, and he wrote a whole bunch of like tons of art files for RPGs back in the day, and he made it all available to anybody, royalty free. And so we packaged all that, organized it a little bit, and put it into a package as part of the iPhone game kit. So when you get the iPhone game kit, you got a bunch of artwork that you can play with too. So if you want to learn programming, a great way to start is if you have a ton of art already. You don't need to go and trying to find an artist or make your own art. You just got all these characters and buildings and effects and stuff you can throw in the game and learn how it all works. So thanks to Reiner, we got that in there. And I kind of lost my trail of thought. What were we talking about again?
I was just complimenting that how, I mean, it solved my problem that I will be including in my next Learning Coco 3D series, like the sprite animation, so that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so that's cool. Nice. Now, the game, the iPhone game kit, that works on the iPhone and the iPad, am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have any plans to do it on the Mac itself?
Definitely, yeah. Particularly, though, I'm interested in Android right now. I got an Android phone a little bit ago, and to tell you the truth, I hate it. I really don't like Android phones at all. It constantly annoys me. It didn't there's so many things I could tell you why I don't like it. It reminds me of Windows, especially. And I hate Windows with a passion. I grew up programming for Windows for maybe, 10 or 15 years, and DOS and Windows and all that stuff. And finally, when I found Apples and Macs, I was like, thank you, God! Somebody made a great operating system and made it available to people. It doesn't crash. There's no spyware. And it just works, and it turns on fast. I love Apples.
So. You know what? When I switched over to the Mac, I was my first experience was, oh crap, this isn't working at all like I expected. But a month later, I was like, okay, I can see now why people are starting to, why people would hate Windows and prefer Macs. And I think 3 months later, I was totally Mac. Didn't even consider going back to Windows anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have to use Windows on my day job, so.
Oh, you poor unfortunate soul.
Yeah.
But of course, if you have Windows, if you use Windows for work, at least work with Visual Studio and C Sharp. So that's a big plus.
Oh, I have like so much anger toward Visual Studio. I mean, really, God. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just when you work on, and this we are going kind of off topic, but when you work on Xcode, and it's super fast. Or you work on TextMate, of course, you cannot really compare TextMate with Visual Studio because TextMate is just like, you know, very simple editor. But
yeah,
I can still produce quality Ruby on Rails apps using TextMate. By the time the Visual Studio starts, I will be done with my app. So, I mean, and when you talk to Microsoft people, their only reply is, well, it works on our machine. And they don't realize that there are so many developers, so many lead who are like alpha geeks that are moving from this .NET platform to Ruby on Rails and Mac platform or the iOS platform. They just don't realize what's going on.
Yeah.
And they're just saying, oh, it works on our machine. And I mean, okay, I mean, then we'll just move on to Ruby on Rails or something else. So... yeah.
Okay. Well, I think what I enjoyed most with Visual Studio was actually Visual Assist and
IntelliSense.
IntelliSense refactoring. Visual Assist is basically an enhancement to Visual Studio, and it brings in the really cool features, extra code highlighting, code refactoring, very powerful.
Does it cost more?
It costs, I think it's like $100 or something like that.
It does cost more. Hmm. Oh, it's funny.
Yeah, but that's something you can't work with out.
Hmm.
But yeah. Okay, let's get back to before we start a flame war, Xcode versus Visual Studio. Let's get back to the topic.
Yeah, I'm quite thankful that Xcode has all that for free. And it's rad, and it works great, and it's fast, and it. I love the auto completion, especially in Xcode.
Yeah, there are some people. I mean, I'm reading the tweets, and I mean, there are some people who are having problem with Xcode crash, Xcode 4 crashing actually a lot of times during their development. So there is also a new product that JetBrains is working. I think it's called AppCode, APPCODE. It's not released yet, but you can try it out. And JetBrains is a very good company that you know. I think they produce ReSharper, RubyMine, and all those good tools. So really looking forward to how they implement the app code and whenever it's released. Yeah,
that's an IDE.
That's an IDE. Yes, app code.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to try this because I want to make sure it's Cobol2D is working with it. But to be honest, I mean. Cobol2D is a pretty large project if you consider all the libraries that it includes, and I haven't had, can't remember a single crash in Xcode that wasn't caused by me. There are some people who have problems with code completion, IntelliSense. No, that's the Microsoft thing. CodeSense. Took me a while. I think I spent a whole day on that, and turns out that. The whole problem with CodeSense in static libraries or in external projects is that if you include them recursively with a double star at the end, that's something that Xcode sometimes doesn't like, and especially if you combine it with backtracks. Not sure what's the correct word, but if you have a path like /my/folder/ ./, so you're basically going back one folder, and that's something that Xcode doesn't like, relative folders, basically, relative path.
That's with Xcode 4?
That's for Xcode 4, and I set up Cobol2D to have very explicit every folder that's included as a header search path is specified individually, and CodeSense works great, and it's actually quite fast. If you open it for the first time, my computer does maybe 30 seconds of indexing, and then it's done, and I have CodeSense for all the libraries included, so that's awesome.
Way to go with COBOL2D, by the way. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, and I'm going further and further.
So let's get back to the questions, Nathaniel. If you had to do it all over again, what would you do differently?
I'm going to give you a straight up answer here. I'm in the position now where I'm helping people online, you know, make their video games, and I'm kind of living the lifestyle of teaching people to make video games now. Honestly, if I were to do it all over again, I wish I would have, in 2010, I wish I would have actually just wrote games. I feel that I could have made an income doing that, and I'm at the point now where I'm starting to make video games again, but I think, you know, I'm always looking at shortcuts in my life. I'm like, okay, this experience, did it fulfill me? Did it give me what I was really looking for? And the iPhone Game Kit, it did. You know, I feel fulfilled. I feel a great person. I feel like I'm doing a good thing for the community. I'm teaching people and things like that. But if I had it to do over again, I would take that time back in my life and say, all right, let's write an awesome video game. Let's write an RPG that's online, that's in a persistent world, or maybe a cool side scroller like Metroid. You know, I love video games, and I think if I could get to that shortcut in life of making those video games, that would be the most fulfilling thing to me.
That's really cool. I haven't heard someone being so enthusiastic about making games like you in like 10 years or so. So that's really refreshing to hear that.
Oh, I mean, it's today's the day. We got iPhones. We got Androids. We got all these cool little platforms now, mobile, in our pockets. And it's bringing back the whole 2D retro thing. I loved all the old school games. Nintendo, Super Nintendo is one of my favorite game platforms. Sega Genesis as well. Like, those two platforms were when games just started getting really cool, you know? And now we got those things in our pockets. And it's encouraging the fact that we can make those 2D retro games because they look good on an iPhone and they play good on an iPhone. And when games started going really 3D, and we started getting all these awesome, you know, 3D console systems and all the 3D things on computers, I liked that, but it wasn't as natural to me. I didn't have as much fun with video games when they started going so 3D. I love the 2D things, and that's why I love Coco's 2D. I love coding in things that are just 2D. It's simple, and you can get away with 3D effects that look 3D. And feel 3D without having to be all the complexity of 3D.
Yeah, that's right. 3D is a bitch, if I may say so.
You got to know calculus, basically.
Oh yeah, geometry and trigonometry, whatever else.
And botany and zoology as well.
What are they called? Quaternions.
Oh yeah, I don't even.
And
know
also
how to
moon cycles.
That.
Moon cycles, very important. No, but I think you remind me of the guys I worked with when I started working on games in '99 in a small shop doing Game Boy games, mostly the games like in the iPhone RPG Kit. They're tile based. They have either a top down view and you walk around and do quests, or the other type of games we made mostly were jump and runs. The only exception, if I remember correctly, was a BMX game we made, and that's just still my favorite game. But from then on, if you work in an environment where more and more people work on the game, it's less and less about the, oh, that would be so cool, let's try this, we have to add this feature and it'll be awesome, and it turns into people starting to talk about what's not so good about the game, about the company. And if you get this all the time, it's basically just like any other job anywhere. So we could just as well be programming databases and had the same conversations about how the database interface sucks, or how management is going to rip us off, or whatever else.
Yeah. It's kind of a too many cooks in the kitchen thing, and it's also like a workroom talk thing. Like, let's go sit by the water cooler and talk about talk, you know, crap about our lawyer.
Exactly.
I know what you mean, man. I'm a big fan of small game teams.
Okay. Well, what's the next question? What would you recommend others who would be planning to, or who are planning to release their game as source code or make a game kit? What would you recommend to those people to make it a success?
First of all, I would say, you know, don't expect a huge success ongoing. You know, if you're gonna release your game source code, that's cool. You know, I mean, I think you're doing a great thing for people. You know, allowing them to learn from it, that's cool. But it's not going to make you rich unless you really put a lot of effort in marketing and you're dedicating yourself to it. And I think the difference between the iPhone Game Kit and just selling source code is huge. I mean, the iPhone Game Kit is a whole kit full of, you know, documentation, learning how to make iPhone games. There's theory behind video games. There's artwork so you can start your own game. It's the whole point of the iPhone Game Kit is really to teach you how to make iPhone games or mobile games, Android games, whatever, and also giving you all the things you need to make those games. So if you're going to go sell the source code to your game, that might work for you temporarily, but I just say focus on what you love. If you really love, you know, coding games and you would love to sell your source code, then great. Just don't expect it to be lasting unless you're really putting a lot of effort behind it.
Mm-hmm. So, Nathaniel, since you, I mean, your game kit, of course, consists of the source code as well as the manual how to proceed or how, to, I mean, explaining the source code. Do you think you put extra effort to polish the source code or, I mean, you know, since your source code is basically the main thing that people will see?
Yeah, I've always been, what's that quote from WordPress? Code is poetry. Isn't that it?
Never heard it, but makes sense.
On the WordPress site, I think that there's this quote that says, code is poetry. I love that quote. I totally agree. Ever since I was a kid, I always thought that writing code was a very beautiful thing. And you can simplify things. You can make stuff look apparent. You know, you can write your code so simple that it just makes sense kind of looking at it. And I love code like that. And I try and write code like that, too, so that you know, I comment everything anyways. But I like to write code that you can look at and you don't even have to read the comments. And you can kind of go, oh, that does that and that does that. So I like to write beautiful code. I like to write poetic code even.
I even wrote poetry.
In the code, yeah.
Yeah, that too. Actually, yeah. Sometimes when I'm feeling like it, there are maybe some comments which are actually poetry, but it's rare.
Yeah. Mm.
So, Nathaniel, I mean, how do you think your iPhone Game Kit is being utilized by users? Do you think that they are actually using it to just to like copy it and then making a new game, changing the tile maps and changing the enemies and sprites and that's it? Or are they actually using it to learn game development using CocoaStudy from scratch?
Mostly people learning from game development from scratch. I'm so proud of the people that have read the book and have started making their own games. In particular, there's a dude named Justin Stallman on my website. When we first started releasing the iPhone Game Kit, this guy, he was a beginner at first. You know, he was just getting into making iPhone games. He had worked in ActionScript, is it? AS3, something like that. I've never coded in ActionScript before, but he came from that background and started learning iPhone games. And day by day, this guy started getting better and better and making his own characters and learning how code works and stuff. And I'm proud of him. I'm proud of a lot of people that have made games. There's another guy that just released his own game, and we're going to start putting, you know, a section on the iPhoneGameKit.com about people that have read the iPhone Game Kit and then started making their own games. So yes, there's some people that are just taking the kit and modifying it a little bit and learning to make games, but there's people that are, you know, taking that knowledge they learned from modifying the kit and then making their own games too, and I'm real excited for them. There's something else I was going to say, but it'll come to me.
Okay, we wait for that. Yeah, cool. So it's I don't have too much information about the people who use my line drawing kit, but I know that there are at least two or three games being developed with the kit or based on the kit. So that's a cool experience, and at least they told me and showed the game, and it's very interesting to see what they did with it.
Rob, oh, that's his name. Rob actually bought your kit, the starter kit, and he wrote a game. It's called Infinity Control. He read my iPhone game kit and started learning to make games, and then he also bought your starter kit and wrote a game called Infinity Control. And he actually hired out an artist to make all this rad art. He got somebody to make sound effects too. He paid that dude to make sound effects, paid somebody to make art. He put together a really, a game using your starter kit, with his own art, his own sounds, and it's awesome. I'm proud of that guy.
That's cool. I haven't
These are
actually.
beginners, man. These are people that just started learning. I'm excited for them.
That's great. I haven't heard of this game yet. I'm just looking at the video. That's cool.
Yeah, it's got this old, like, 50s sci-fi look.
Yeah, really cool. Nice.
Yeah.
So that's great news. Another question that I'm curious about, but it's a bit off topic. So I'd like to know what it's like living on a boat.
All right. I got plenty to say about that.
Do you ever get seasick while coding?
Oh man, to tell you the truth, I have never been seasick on my own boat. But I'll tell you, the first 4 or 5 days living on my boat were crazy. I was seeing, I was spinning constantly. When I would get on shore, I would be like wobbly legs, sea legs. It was funny. Since then, that was about 3 years ago. Since then, I've never ever had wobbly legs again. Even if I go on land for months at a time and then come back to my boat, I still don't have sea legs. So I forget what it's like to have sea legs. But yes, I live on a boat in San Diego Bay. So what happens is we got tons of people going by in their huge yachts. Going 40 knots by, it's going so fast, creating these huge wakes. And when they hit my boat rocks like crazy, like monkeys are outside shaking my whole boat, And it can be quite distracting. I have to sometimes hold on to my laptop so it doesn't fall in my face, because like the boat is rocking so much that my laptop will fall off of the stand I've built for it. So. It can get a bit gnarly out there. I have to sometimes breathe deeply and just go, okay, this wave is going to pass. So just wait for like a minute. Okay, it's back to calm again.
Cool.
So it can be gnarly sometimes. And in the winter, it gets really cold. But I'll tell you, man, it is such a rewarding lifestyle. I have to dinghy out to my boat. So, there's times I have to row out to it, and it's a different feeling, like when your front door is something you have to row to. But now I have a good motor, so I mean, I can zip out there and zip back, and it's been a reliable motor for me, and I love it because I'm near nature. There's waves, constantly hitting my boat. It's beautiful. At nighttime, the water gets calm. It's glassy. The water looks black, and there's downtown San Diego reflecting off of it. I can see fireworks going off and seals swimming by me and dolphins sometimes. And the other
Oh.
year, we had a big a baby whale in our bay.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you ever go on trips with a boat?
No, the engines don't work. So it's basically primarily a computer studio. We took this boat and said, I got the boat for $500. I mean, it was in a lien sale. I went to this marina who was, a marina will repossess a boat because somebody didn't pay their marina fees, and then they can legally take the boat and just sell it for whatever they can get. They auction it off. And I was the only person at this auction, so it was a $1,000 boat. That was the minimum bid, but I bid $500, and they said, "Okay, you just take it." So,
Wow,
that's a good deal. Yeah,
yeah. So, I mean, I
nice.
live for it's. I live in Southern California for $200 a month. That's all it costs to rent this mooring ball that I'm on. And I turned this boat into a computer studio slowly. You know, it took a couple years basically of effort and setting up solar panels and, you know, learning about electricity and all this stuff. I didn't even know how to use a drill before I got my own boat. But now, man, I feel like I can tie knots and drill things and cut things and saw and all this stuff I never knew how to do, but it got me really in touch with my physical manliness, you know.
Cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
So Nathaniel, have you ever been in a situation in your boat that you might ask yourself that I might need a bigger boat? like a Jaws reference over there. Like if you're in the middle of a sea or somewhere, and you see sharks just wandering around or something.
No, I've never seen sharks, but my first boat was a 26-foot sailboat that, honestly, if I stood inside of it, the main hatch would come up to my chest. So there's no way I could stand up in this boat. I had to sit down all the time. I hung my laptop from the ceiling and used a keyboard to code. It was a tiny little boat. Her name's Faith. She's a great little boat. But now, you know, since then, I had Faith, and then I gave that boat to my friend, and that boat's still near me in the marina. And then I have my boat now. Her name's Lotus, and she's a little bit bigger, and you can stand up in her. And there's a big back deck, a big inside. There's drum sets actually. There's a drum set in my boat, guitars, computer now, and so yeah, having a bigger boat for me was a really good step because now I have all the studio I was really imagining.
Oh yeah, you also are in a band or make music, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Is there anything we should know?
Yeah, I'm coming out with some new music soon. My new moniker is Soul Minus Ego. And I'm working a lot on live music right now, live electronic rock. You know, I play guitars, and I play drum beats with my guitar, and I can loop all these effects and stuff. And I'm working on creating a live electronic experience for people right now. So as soon as I come out with that, I'll start playing live gigs, and then I'll come out with albums and stuff. But yeah, I've written music in the past. I've written a lot of industrial rock, but that was very programmed, very computer oriented. Music. I would sit down and write songs basically by just messing with music. I would record vocals and then mess with it so much until it turned into a song. But this whole new thing is I'm trying to do pure live experiences, create a simple beat on the fly and then create a riff right there and, you know, add in music as and layer in, you know, everything live. So that's one of my hobby projects right now.
Cool. And about games, I mean, you said you made games for the past 15 years or something like that. And are there any games you worked on that are popular that people might know?
Not really. But
not really. There was a game about chickens, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I wrote a game called Adventures with Chickens. It was the first game I ever wrote. I was a freshman in high school, so I had a very sophomoric attitude back then. And so I made purple chickens in space. They're purple because they're running out of air. So your whole mission was to go save these chickens from asphyxiating.
Sort of like lemmings, I guess.
It was whimsical, you could say. It was a puzzle game, and I had a lot of fun writing it. I wrote a level editor for it and everything, and that was back in DOS. So that was kind of my a fun game. I wrote another game kind of like Arkanoid. What's the other one? Pong. You know, like a Pong clone kind of. And that was honestly that game was cool. And then you know since then I took a big break. I wrote enterprise software for a while, business software, and then I got back into games just recently. Started making iPhone games, and I'm so excited about RPGs right now. I can't wait to make a Mmorpg.
Mmorpg.
Yeah.
Cool. So, Stefan, do you have any other questions for Nathaniel?
I guess I would have some, but I think we were already going so much off topic, and I think I'm running out of Cocos2D based questions.
So, Nathaniel, I think I have one last question from my side. If in Cocos2D, if you want to add one more feature, or if you want to improve something in the Cocos2D framework, what would it be?
If I were to go and improve the actual Cocos2D framework?
No, I mean, if you wanted some feature in Cocos2D developed by whoever is developing Cocos2D framework, then what would that feature you really want to be that in the Cocos2D framework?
Full-on Android portability, for sure.
We're
getting that right now with Cocos2D X.
Yeah.
So maybe if I've been thinking about this as well, maybe what Cocos2D X needs is an Objective-C layer that models the Cocos2D for iPhone API so that we can program in Objective-C and then basically with a Cocos2D X engine in the background. But that won't be helping for cross-platform development, but it would help to get more people to use the Cocos2D X engine.
Yeah, I thought Cocos2D X was insisted on being Objective-C only. I mean, or not insisted, but I thought it was Objective-C only already.
Cocos2D X is C++, but they modeled the entire Objective-C workflow based on the Objective-C style. So it's a bit awkward if you are a pure C++ programmer and you look at Cocos2D X, you'll feel like, what the hell are they doing? But if you come from an Objective-C background, you understand pretty quickly what they why certain things are written in a certain way, which may look awkward for C++ programmers, but, well, it's just some getting used to, I guess.
I could have sworn my project compiled in Objective-C, but maybe I was just, I don't know. I haven't explored it enough, honestly, but I'm really going to put a lot of energy into Cocos2D X and, you know, porting my games to Android, and also multiplayer. Those are two huge things that I'm really interested in right now.
Would you be porting the game kit as well?
Yeah, I want to make the Quexlore RPG ported to Android. So, cool. And I want to have a good platform so that I can release games on the iPhone and Android. I read somewhere that Android is something like 44% of the market, and iPhones are only 17% of the market right now.
Yeah, but
is that correct?
I think that's about correct. I think they are about double the market share than iPhone, but it's not really comparable because you have this huge device fragmentation, and the other problem is that there's either no centralized app store or the app store is crap. Either way, there's tons of apps that are practically useless, which you wouldn't find in the app store, in the iPhone app store anymore, because Apple is prohibiting them, like thousands of fart apps, wallpaper apps, maybe even porn apps, and sometimes even there can be dangerous apps on the Android exploiting some security holes or stuff like that.
I got a Warcraft 2 sound effect app. You remember Warcraft 2?
Yeah, of course.
All right. You know what's the voice of the orcs? Remember the orc the worker unit?
Ooh. You mean yeah. When you click on them, they have those cool lines. When you click on them three times and they get nasty.
Hello.
Yeah. That was nice.
Yeah, that's an Android app. It actually just plays sound effects from Warcraft 2.
Great. Just what you need.
Yeah.
No, I'm not so excited about Android as a developer, specifically not because of the device fragmentation, and business-wise, I hear that there's a lot less people who actually purchase apps on Android devices.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And also you don't just have the device fragmentation, you also have the OS fragmentation, because if you get your Android mobile from Samsung, you will have to wait that they update the OS for that particular device, and so you have a much bigger distribution of well, active operating systems on Android than you have on iPhone, where I think you can assume that most are already on iOS 4.0. I would say like 75%, and the others probably can't even upgrade because they run the first generation devices or something like that.
Ah, I hear you.
Personally, I'm very interested in going towards Mac because I want to be playing games with a keyboard and a mouse again and try doing that. And also because I haven't been programming games on the Mac, and with the Mac App Store, it's a very interesting venue to try and release a game on the Mac now.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. Is there anything coming out where we'll be able to make CocoaStudio games in an Objective-C language and then release it as in an online web browser?
Not that I know of. There is some. I got the link a couple times. There is a product that promises to port your iPhone app to almost every other platform. I have no idea how they do that, but they promise to do that on any app, as far as I understood it. So it doesn't have to be initially programmed with their framework, and you just run it through some, you know, decompiler or something like that, and out it outputs the code for the specific platforms. But I'm not sure what to make of it. I think it's not yet available. It's a beta version or something like that, which you can register for. Maybe some of the listeners know what I mean. But other
I'd
than
love to
that.
see CocoaStudio become this kind of hugely mature platform where we can actually release on Mac, on the web, or for anything.
Well, there's CocoaStudio JavaScript, of course, which means you can write CocoaStudio apps on the web browser. But I think the real problem is that they all called CocoaStudio, but you can't really port between the different CocoaStudio versions. CocoStudio X is C++, iPhone is C, Objective-C. You have JavaScript. I think there are some older ports which use Ruby. Then there's, of course, the original Python version. So there's already a big fragmentation in the CocoaStudio space. So if you wanted to have a really cross-platform game engine that's modeled after CocoaStudio, it would have to be probably C++. So CocoaStudio X is come in the coming down in the coming years, it's going to be more and more popular for cross-platform developers. That's for sure. But I'm a bit, well, it's their decision. It makes sense. They want to focus on mobile, but they recently said that Mac porting is not on their not their priority. So that'll be a while before you can make Mac games with CocoaStudio X.
All right.
Okay.
Well, it'll get better, and I'm really excited about Cobalt TD too.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we'll do a separate podcast on CobalToD in which Stefan will kind of like explain the inner workings or how he got started and all that stuff.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that will be because most of the people are actually asking. I think I tweeted a couple of weeks ago and they were saying that we want to find more about CobalToD. So that will be a nice topic, I guess.
Okay, I guess I have to blog more about it. I mean, I wrote a chapter in the book now, and so I know what I can write about and reuse some of that stuff from the book.
Cool.
Cool.
Now, has any of you downloaded the new version of Xcode and the new framework, which is iOS 5 beta or whatever? And
Yeah, I
if
tried it.
you tried it, and does that work automatically with the CocoaStudio? I mean,
Yeah.
you just run the CocoStudio installer, and it will create the templates for you, I guess. Is that how it works?
I haven't tried CocoaStudio installation, but if you mean Xcode 4.2, which is currently under NDA and stuff like that, yeah, you can open existing projects and run them. That worked for me.
Me too.
But like, if you want to create a new CocoStudio project, will it have the templates, like Xcode 4.2, will it have the templates to, or do I have to install Coco Studio again to get the templates?
Let me check. Create a new project. Where's the list? And yeah, they are still there.
They're still
So
there. Okay. Yeah.
those you installed for Xcode 4, they still work in Xcode 4.2 apparently.
Okay. Thank you, Apple.
Cool.
Yeah. And one feature I really like is that they fix the schemes, so you don't have one target and then like seven or eight entries for each device simulator, 4.x, 4.x2, X3,
Yeah.
and a device and stuff like that. So that's looking much better now.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have also installed the iOS 5, I guess, right? I mean, the version, the framework iOS 5, I guess.
Yeah, it comes with
It comes with it. Okay. Yeah. Because there's some cool features that but all those are Cocoa Touch features, I guess. But like, I want to try it out, like the iMessage and creating the magazine stand or something. I don't know what's that called, but it's pretty cool, I guess.
I really want to try the cloud storage thing because it would open up things like saving your save games on the cloud storage or allowing players to manipulate the game world, and then you update the game world for other players to download. Or you basically can have level editors and share the created levels with other people by saving and loading it from the cloud. So that would be cool.
Oh,
yeah. I'm
Yeah.
most excited about the memory management, though. You think
Oh,
that'll
yeah.
work?
Well, maybe I'll try it, but I think out of the box, I think it's what it's called, ARC. Not sure.
Automatic memory management or automatic something, yeah.
You basically just never
Yeah.
have to call release anymore. You know,
Yeah.
they manage all the memory for you. And I'm excited about that. If that works, that's a great tool for beginners.
Yep. Absolutely, and really necessary because it's one of the things I was missing from C Sharp or Lua. But well, I hope that it's gonna be tested and implemented in the official Cocoa Studio iPhone distribution.
Yeah.
That would be awesome if we could go and well never do a release again,
Yeah.
or auto release or alloc, maybe even. Not sure. I think you don't have to alloc, release, retain, and auto release anymore. So that's gone. That would be awesome.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay. I think that's pretty much it. Do you have any last comments, Nathaniel, that you want, or any message to the listeners?
Yeah, follow your hearts.
Cool.
I know that's cliche,
Yeah.
but it's so true, man. Don't look your dreams in the eye.
And don't take it literally because you would be spinning around yourself.
Yeah.
And get a bigger boat, as it says.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I'd like to thank Stefan Eitherheim for attending the podcast, and of course, especially Nathaniel West for introducing us to the iPhone Game Kit. And you can download iPhone Game Kit by going to the www.iphonegamekit.com. There's a special promotion going on, 30% off until July 15th, and you will get Coco Studio source code, two books, and it's tons and tons of artwork and lifetime updates. And of course, we'll put this iPhone Game Kit and all the links that we discuss in the podcast in our show notes. I think I hope you're going to enjoy the iPhone Game Kit. I really liked it. I mean, it solved my problem that I was having in like a couple of seconds. So it's a very detailed PDF book, and it's a very detailed also the code, very nicely polished code. So thanks to Nathaniel for working on the iPhone Game Kit. So thanks,
Thank you guys.
yeah.
Thank you guys for putting together the Coco Studio podcast. This is really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Okay, then thank you very much. And I think this podcast will be, well, uploaded after I added in the music from Marco Newman. So thanks to Marco Newman for an awesome soundtrack for Coco Studio podcast. And you know what? Maybe we'll get Marco Newman on the show because music and sound effects are a very important part of the game. So
yeah,
so we should do that. So that's pretty much it, guys. So thanks a lot, Stefan and Nathaniel.
Yeah, thank you. Hugs and kisses.
Thank you, too. Yeah, okay, hugs and kisses, I guess.
All right, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.